Hello, my name is Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing a Floydcast number 12 for May the 5th, 2014. Last week we talked about the name, and we talked about, gave some examples. Out of the 81 combinations, gave some examples. Some of the one name combinations, they are a standout in a bad way. One of the ones I mentioned was the accident looking for a place to happen, the 775. And I gave the example of a story where Donald Sterling, the owner of the Clippers, said something that was obviously racist. It has been confirmed. And the NBA stepped in now and given him punishment, you know, consequences, and banned him from the league. And I'm saying that with some combinations, they can't help it. They're an accident looking for a place to happen. It's going to come out, in other words. And with this guy, even though he's the owner of a billion-dollar team, it's hard to be more successful than to have a professional sports franchise, right? But then some people, they just sort of, you know, their name is going to compel them to do stuff that doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. And then I mentioned that the Clipper, the individual members of that team, they also, Clipper is a 527, same two numbers, so just reversed. But it's also another super sensitive accident looking for a place to happen, like my sister has the 527 nickname, which she goes by all the time. It was like two of those together, and sure enough, a problem happened that involved both of them, and sort of a long-term or a major or substantial problem. Well, after I finished the Floydcast last week, I realized there were a couple of other 775s involved in the same thing. The NBA has a new commissioner, Adam Silver. Well, Adam Silver, when you add up his first name plus his last name, the total of his name is a 775. The total of his name is an accident looking for a place to happen. I was blown away when I thought of that. And he's brand new commissioner, so this is like his first challenge. Pretty substantial. And then, thinking about it further, the coach of the Clippers is Doc Rivers. Now with Doc Rivers, he has a 5 destiny. Just like Adam Silver. And that's not good. In fact, it's 235. And 235 is sort of like, you know, problems or conflict, bitter experiences with people. And so you can go, okay, well, that makes sense. But then I was like, there's no way this guy was born Doc. He wasn't born Doc. So let's look him up on Wikipedia. So I type in Doc Rivers on Wikipedia. Bring up the page. For Glenn Doc Rivers. Glenn with two N's, 527. So the coach of the Clippers has a 527. So that's the coach, the commissioner of the league, the owner, and all the players all have an accident looking for a place to happen. It's almost unbelievable. You know, like the movie The Perfect Storm. When you have this many with that combination, it's just inevitable. Well, anyway, they seem to have got past this individual's nasty remarks, and he's getting his consequences, and they're getting on to playing basketball. And so, honestly, I'm surprised it's moving towards resolution that quickly. You know, when I say resolution, I mean for the one guy, it's only going to end badly. Admittedly, for the team and the players and the coach and the commissioner, there's a lingering aftertaste. But it is unifying. They already put like a big banner, I believe, outside of the Clippers where they play basketball, outside of their stadium. They put a big banner up there saying we're all united. And it has had a unifying effect. And that's nice to see. But if ever did I choose a good combination to demonstrate, I think that was it. Anyway, this will be ongoing because these 775s, they have accidents. They have problems. They have conflicts that no one else would have. And it gets in the news, not surprisingly. The news doesn't publish when your daughter gets a 4.0. Maybe the local news, the house news you posted on the fridge. But the news wants bad news. And unfortunately, these accidents looking for a place to happen are perfect bad news generators. That's why you see them in the news. That's why you can study them, and statistically, you can prove it for yourself. Anyway, so that was my update. The other thought I had related to basketball. In my life, I never played a lot of basketball. I played other sports. Loved football. Played soccer when I was young. Lacrosse. Street hockey. Ice hockey. Table tennis. Badminton. Volleyball. Baseball. And basketball was the least. We never had a basketball. Who? I think we had a basketball. We lived on a hill. We had a basketball. We had no place to play it. We had no hoop to shoot into. At some point, we might have had a basketball backstop. My brothers might have made one. I should ask them at some point. But it was off a gravel driveway that wasn't even. As I say, we lived on steep hills, so our property had... We had, like, gardens and, you know, sort of terraced gardens. We had prickly bushes, like boysenberry bushes, near the driveway. So if we were trying to play basketball, it was a bit of a miracle if we could get a shot away, kind of thing. And the other thing is, you know, basketball, the taller you are, the better. And it just wasn't a sport that my father liked. He set the tone. He played tennis, so we played tennis. He rode his bike, so we rode our bikes. He loved football. We played, you know, a lot of football together. It was a lucky, nice thing to have a dad who threw a football with you. That's one of those keepers, for sure. Tennis, well, I think I mentioned tennis already. Table tennis. I never beat my dad at table tennis. I never beat him, even when he was in his 70s. I didn't really come close, honestly, which is kind of amazing. And he had a tumor on his optic nerve for probably a decade or more. And it affected. He'd lose the ball. Like in tennis, you throw the ball up to serve. He would lose the ball. He was hitting the ball based on memory. So I'm sure it was affecting him in table tennis. I never beat him. Man. And it's not like he was competitive either. He just simply played well. And in fact, if I was too competitive, the game was over. He wouldn't put up with that. So basketball is just... I didn't watch it. I mean, it wasn't covered in Canada. You know, like most sports weren't. Until ESPN came along. It was the wide world of sports on ABC Saturday. You caught a little bit of a sport here and a little bit of a sport there. ESPN has had wide-ranging repercussions. I mean, one thing is, you know, they talk about a la carte with cable channels. Like, why do we get a bundle of channels, right? And why can't we pay for our channels individually? Well, part of the answer is that each channel is just about worthless, except for a few of them. Like Discovery Channel is considered valuable. I don't like it, but it's considered valuable. For me, it's too popcorn, too fake, too dumbed down. I like History Channel a bit more, but History Channel has its Counting Cars and Pawn Stars and dumb conspiracy shows. It has plenty of those, which I don't like. But it has the Universe series, it has Modern Marvels, it has How the Earth Was Made, which is at least three seasons of that. It has some great shows, which I've really got a lot out of. So some channels are you could charge for, but USA Network, who would pay money for that channel? But on the other hand, there's one group of channels that people always want. No, not HBO. Yeah, there are people who want HBO, and they always charge for that separately, don't they? I think the reason is that HBO is, you know, that unfiltered stuff which some people like, but it's, you know, it's like the F-bomb channel. We tried HBO, the free thing, and we just phoned them up and said, you might as well stop, like, we're not interested. If a show is on HBO, it, for me personally, it's a bad sign. In a way, HBO is like Fox. It's like a continuation of Fox. It's like if Fox in the lower safe channels could be R-rated, it would be HBO. And maybe that's not even justified to say that, but that's what comes to mind. Well, obviously the channels I'm talking about that everyone would pay money for is the ESPN channels, the sports channels. Those are high-value channels, and I don't know, I could wax eloquent about ESPN for quite some time. One little bit of trivia pops to mind. Many people have named their son or daughter Espen, or variations of Espen, in honor of ESPN. I don't think there are too many kids named CBS. CBS is a nice channel. It's one of the channels I like of the lower common channels. But you don't name kids that. Espen doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but sports is it was the first reality show. You know, you got the fake news, the bad news. You got the laugh track, fake sitcoms, and scary music, fake dramas. But then you had real sports. That guy going down that ski run and sliding off the side into the people with their skis on ESPN, you know, that was the agony of defeat guy. He became a guy. They interviewed him and everything, you know. One wipeout and he was set for life. There's something about sports that the real world that you can't spin. So same with this Donald Sterling guy. He was at the heart of sports. And oh, by the way, speaking of spin, now supposedly he has cancer, and supposedly it's being confirmed that he has cancer. Well, that's a good way to get sympathy, isn't it? I mean, maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Is it relevant? I don't think it's relevant. It was prostate cancer. Well, here's the thing. As you get older, your chances of prostate cancer increase. And basically, beyond a certain age, every male has prostate cancer. He's 80. So we knew, I knew he had prostate cancer without him going to the doctor. So when I heard that one and putting that all together, it was like, okay, sympathy vote. Well played, sir. Well played. And he's confused. Now the girlfriend's defending him while he was confused, you know. So here comes the sympathy vote. When he spoke on that tape, I don't know if you've heard it, but it was pretty crystal clear. I won't say it was vicious sounding. The content, the impact was bad. But it was said very clearly, very matter-of-factly, like a business person. So, here's the sports. The sports channels. And to basketball, as I've rediscovered it with one of my jobs caring for one group of kids. I get a chance to play some basketball after school with them sometimes. And it's really grown on me. You know, it's one of these things where when you don't know how to do it, it's not as enjoyable. And if you don't do it for a long time, you sort of build up an opinion about it, which is probably not based in too many facts. We have a basketball stand, or whatever you call it, backboard, outside of our home, which is overgrown. It's overgrown with some trees we planted, which is kind of a nice thing, to have trees overgrowing a basketball backboard, which, you know, obviously is almost 10 feet high. So that's kind of nice. But we don't have a way to play there. We got cars, we got, you know, busy road, we've got trees. When I say cars, you know, our own parked cars, and it's a couple of busy roads that we live at the corner of. And so I'm actually in the process of trying to give that away. Find someone who can use it more than we can. But we had a nice basketball that we bought new maybe 8 years ago, and we just never used it. So you buy something new, you don't use it well, it can still be in pretty good shape, and I put some air in it, it's doing great. So that's another basketball to add to the group of balls that we have where I play basketball these days. My hangout with the kids. Oh, kids are so interesting. The dynamics of kids. You know, you leave them to their own devices and kids can be every bit as mean as adults, that's for sure. It's really sad but fascinating. There isn't a lot of fairness. By default, there isn't a lot of fairness in human relationships. That's kind of interesting. It's something you should sort of lodge in the back of your mind and remember. Fairness is not there. You have to put it in. You know, one of the nice things with myself being there and playing basketball with them as part of caring for them, that's very hands-on. If I was, you know, on the sidelines, inside looking out the window kind of thing, you can hear them, you can see them, but you miss some of the dynamic and you miss some of the little cheap shots that happen. And things escalate a little bit before you get onto the court, before you start to deal with it. And so it's nice to be right there, and you prevent a lot of problems from happening. And you become, you know, it's fun how kids involve you in games in different ways. In one game, they have various, you know, kinds of tag games. They got different names these days. But in one of them, you know, there was like the kids and the teacher. Well, guess which one I was. And one of them, it was so funny. They were trying to get past you, and when I was a kid, that was called British Bulldog. British, which is kind of funny, being from Canada, which, you know, was started by the Brits. After the natives and after some French explorers, anyway, the Brits came along and civilized the country. So British Bulldog was, you know, you'd say British Bulldog and then people would try and run past you and you'd tag them, and then as you tagged a person, they became on your team, and then eventually it was like the last person trying to run past and you had like a whole bunch of people trying to tag him. So a good game in the sense that simple. The person who's it automatically changes, like the first person you tag is it for the next turn. Ah, Pete's. And as you tag more people, do you have more helpers? So even us, let's say the slowest runner, because there's so many people swarming across, assuming you have a whole bunch of kids, that slowest person can probably tag one of them. And that one of them that they tag is now faster than them, plus between the two of them, if they're at all organized, you can start to cover some ground. And then that last person, you know, there's a challenge in it for the person who's super agile, super fast, super good at deking. And apparently deke, the sports term deking, is from decoy, according to Jeopardy. It was on Jeopardy last week. There was something else on Jeopardy last week that was like, you got to be kidding. It was something that was top of my mind. Maybe it'll come to me. So deking. So then as you get near the end, you got that last, you know, talented winger, as we used to call in hockey. Or in football, you'd say a tight end. Wide receiver, tight end. You know, you got that one super fast guy and you're all trying to catch him. He might get passed a couple times, but you're going to get him in the end. And then it's a new game, right? It's a new person. So good formula. Well, anyway, this one they had, I don't remember the name of it, but I was the teacher and they were trying to run past. This is how they played it. They would run to the end of the block. This was three houses away. You could barely communicate, but they would, you know, through hand signals, we would communicate and they would start running towards me. And I was like, you know, dribbling the basketball and like, okay, you want me to do something now? They're running these three houses towards me. And then I have to, you know, try and tag one or two, which of course usually means one because they sort of split up and take turns kind of going past you. And then you tag one, and then they would run past about two to three houses past me. Then, instead of just repeating it the other direction, which is what you do in British Bulldog, they went back to the start of the block, all of them. So they were running two-thirds of a block, and I had to run about 100 feet. So a block is 500 feet, so they were doing four times as much work as I was. Maybe more. I was like, okay, I can do this. This is a good ratio. When you're the care person, you know, the older supervisor, you always want some kind of an advantage. I'm sensing my voice is kind of deep this morning. I think I've been working hard the last couple of days, and good solid sleep, and, you know, my body's tired, but my mind is alert kind of thing. Anyway, so, basketball. Getting a chance to play basketball has caused me to look at it a little bit more favorable. One of the things I figured out for myself was, when I was shooting, sometimes when I would shoot, some days, I'd come out. Usually when I was relaxed, I'd shoot well. And then there would be a point where I was trying too hard, then I'd start to miss all over the place. And then I'd get tired. And when you get tired, now you're erratic. There's no sort of systematic reason why you're missing. You're just, you know, you're tired. This is like an hour and a half of shooting baskets. Anyway, what I figured out was, you got to put backspin on the ball. Well, with ball sports, spin is such an integral part of the sport. Oh, man. The old bend it like Beckham in soccer, European football. You bend it with spin. Or, and this is what sort of happened in the last, I don't know, became more taken advantage of in the last few years, let's say it that way, was to hit the ball deliberately with no spin, and then the ball corkscrews randomly. In other words, it becomes totally unpredictable. This is what was happening with basketball. Some of my throws, I was throwing the ball with no spin, and I was getting unpredictable results. So I just put a little bit of backspin on. What a difference. Now, it's not a cure-all, but it's important. And of course, sure enough, in my mind's eye, when I start thinking about the pros shooting baskets, what do you see but the ball spinning like crazy? So that was kind of a little insightful, little duh moment for me. And it, you know, it helps you go to the next level. Now you can get a little better. For me, getting better, that's what everything is all about. Getting better doing these floodcasts, you know. Better at microphone management, better at editing the final floodcast, you know. It's an amazing marathon to edit these things. These things, when I'm done recording, these are about 75 minutes raw. And I edit them down to 55 minutes, so I take 20 minutes out. 20 minutes of pauses and scratches and dog scratches and deep breaths like I just took. You know, they all get edited out. Maybe not all. The one exception with him, breath-wise, is when I'm laughing. I want to try and convey some of the laughter. So, you know, laughter, is part of it is that it sort of colors everything. It's like when you're smiling and you talk, it colors your voice and people can tell. And the laughter, you know, it trundles out. It sneaks out, it leaks out, and it comes out in different ways. And there's like a bouquet, a laughter bouquet. People who don't laugh, they're like, what are you talking about? All that about laughter? What am I listening to this thing for anyway? You go find a different podcast. So basketball. So one of the things I figured out, I almost never watch basketball on TV. There's some important things I dislike about basketball. Too many timeouts. Each team gets 6 timeouts. That's what it shows on the screen anyway. And I have a feeling that's for each half. So they get like twice the timeouts of football, for example. And so, like for example, if a team gets on a point scoring streak, you know, they get 3 baskets in a row, bang, they take a timeout. Well, like in football, timeouts are super precious, and it comes down to clock management. You need your timeouts to manage the clock. Well, as a result, you almost never have a football team taking a timeout just to change the momentum of the other team. Never happens. It's artificial. That's highly artificial. And, you know, timeouts are one of these things that you shouldn't be able to take a timeout and have this, like, major advantage from it. Like in football, half the time a timeout is taken, you got too many men on the field, you don't know what the next play is, the other team's lining up in a way that you don't know how to handle, so you're like, hey, timeout, hey coach, how should we handle this? There's a reason for it. Except near the end of the game where you're stopping the clock so that you can get a few more plays in and maybe catch the other team. Hockey, almost no timeouts in hockey. It really might be 1 or 2 for the whole game. That's how it should be. You know, it's funny, hockey and basketball are played at the same time of year. Both are in their playoffs right now. And hockey is just so much more exciting. The contrast is really evident to me, having grown up with hockey. Okay, so number one with basketball, too many timeouts. Number two, the formula of basketball, what can happen in a basketball game, is very limited. You dribble. Someone tries to take the ball away, you pass or shoot. Now you could say the same is true of hockey. But the thing is, hockey is the fastest team sport in the world. And it's played on a pretty big arena, 120 feet long, I think is the minimum. I might have the figure wrong. It might be 200, almost 200 feet, 180 feet. I think tennis is 120 feet. And you can easily fit a tennis court inside of a hockey rink. A hockey rink is like 2/3 of a football field long. And basketball is probably more like that tennis court. Another thing with basketball is you just touch someone, touch a hair on their head kind of thing, bang, it's a foul, right? And stops play. The number of free throws, you'll see people at the end of the game, this guy was, you know, had 13 free throws. 13 of them, one guy. One guy had 13, basically, penalty shots. Well, in hockey, you might have one penalty shot in the entire game. So, in other words, penalty shots are not a common way of changing the outcome of a game in hockey. In basketball, the foul system, the free throw system, is a huge part of the game because you're playing on a small court, you got 10 people, and they bump into each other, and you don't tolerate any of it. In hockey, you tolerate, as people probably know, a lot of bumping. Football, you tolerate a lot of bumping. Soccer, things get pretty nasty in soccer before you give someone a yellow card or a red card. You usually only give them a red card if 2 yellows equals a red, or they do something that's very, you know, vicious. So speaking of vicious, basketball has something they call a flagrant technical. You know, I'm not too versed on all this, but I know the gist. So the flagrant is like the next level. It's like, it's one thing to bump into somebody, it's another thing to trip them, let's say. If you trip them on purpose, you get a flagrant. Well, like in hockey, if you get a penalty, it's a huge advantage to the other team. Let's say you trip someone in hockey, the other team, for 2 minutes of the game, 3% of the game, they get a man advantage. Basketball doesn't do this. I don't know why. Instead, in basketball, if you accidentally trip somebody, they get one or maybe two shots. Now, if you make both shots, that equals one basket. Well, if you accidentally trip them and they were about to make one basket, and you give them two shots, and even if they make both shots, what have they gained? They gained absolutely nothing. In other words, by tripping them, you lost nothing. This is a major weakness in basketball, which majorly encourages fouls. Basketball is the only sport I know of where fouls help the team who causes the foul. No other sport is like this. In baseball, you protest with the umpire, you call him an F-bomb, you know, you rag him too much, bang, you're out of there. They throw you right out of the game. Think of the consequence of that. You could be a really good player. Say you're up to bat and they throw a ball and the umpire says it's a strike. And you go, hey, so you swear at him and you say, hey, you're wrong, that was in. And he's like, yeah, well, you're gone. And they kick you out of the game. In basketball, you have to accumulate fouls before they kick you out. And I believe it's on your sixth personal foul, then you get kicked out. You can do it five times. You could, I tripped you five times. And have basically no consequence at all. Although, here's the thing. Let's get back to that tripping. The guy was going to score 2 points for sure. And by the way, these guys are so tall that now when you got the ball, your chance of scoring is pretty high. They can't grab you. They can't wrestle you to the ground. They have to either block the shot or, you know, by a miracle, kind of get in your way and stop your progress. It's hard. And when you're LeBron James, it's very hard, right? So you are going to score that two-point basket. When they give you two shots, it's no gimme. It's no automatic. Shaquille O'Neal, who was one of the worst free throwers in the league, apparently, he was about one-third. When he would take a free throw, he had about a 1 in 3 chance of it going in. So with him, he's going to make a basket. He's very tall, so baskets are very easy. You do something to him, he takes his free throws, and the odds are he gets 2/3 of one basket. In other words, if you foul him 3 times, he scores a total of 2 points. Well, if you hadn't fouled him, he would have scored 6. So your fouls are highly profitable in basketball. This frosts my socks. I just can't tolerate that. I can't watch a sport like that, where you reward the bad guy. Sorry, not interested. You know, it's like rewarding a thug. Hey, look, he's got a knife. Well, give him the ball. What's the difference? You could have a basketball player with a knife. All right, you're not going to score a basket. I got a knife. Okay. There's no difference. It's a thug approach. It's using force in a negative way. It's force versus skill. You know, LeBron James has talent. He's got height. He's got skill. He's got athleticism. And you can foul him, and you will gain from fouling him. That's foul. Well, you know, LeBron, speaking of him, he was hard fouled like a week ago. I apologize. I was going to talk about last week, and I forgot. And nothing was done. No penalty of any kind was given out. And he was fouled so hard he was hurt afterwards. Well, let's get back to the who gains what. The guy who fouled him is such a no-name that I'm sure very few people know who it was. I sure as heck don't. So you have a no-name player, you put him up against LeBron. What I'm getting at is, let's say your no-name player got hurt as a result of this. I'm sorry, but it doesn't matter compared to LeBron. This isn't the playoffs. LeBron is priceless in the playoffs. He's worth millions, literally, in the playoffs. You can have a goon, you can have a nobody go up against him. Collide with him on purpose. cause a dangerous injury, which normally would at least get a technical, and in this case got nothing. And this is basketball. Oh, the guy, by the way, I think he got a fine afterwards. He got no consequence on the court. And he got a token fine afterwards. Oh, it's not token to you or me, but I think 20,000 for some reason comes to mind, or 25. But these guys make millions. Now, maybe he doesn't, but maybe he gets paid by somebody. If you're the billionaire owner and one of your players gets a $25,000 fine, I mean, here's the thing. Let's say that guy extended the series by one game. These games to the home teams, probably to both teams, because they get television money. And then also when they play in your arena, you sell tickets, you sell merchandise, you sell popcorn, concessions. And it's worth millions of dollars. So this guy got a total of one tiny dollar amount fine. His team made millions of dollars minimum from it. And LeBron, almost a priceless player if you think about it, got injured. This is basketball. It really just, that's very upsetting to me. So that was my other basketball thought, was it's my long-standing complaint about basketball is the foul system. Oh, and there's a third one. Luckily, I don't talk about basketball each week, right? There's a third thing I don't like about basketball, and that is with all those timeouts and everything, the last 30 seconds of the game can take 30 minutes. I don't like that. And related to that, you know, you can be down by 5 points, but each little chunk of play lasts about 3 seconds, you know, and by fouling them and everything else, you can come from behind, and it makes for an exciting finish, they say. Well, watching fouls and endless timeouts and having 30 seconds of play take 30 minutes is not exciting to me. It's also not fair, and it's repulsive. When I see a basketball game with 2 minutes left and I'm waiting for, you know, SportsCenter to come on afterwards, I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch something else for half an hour. I'll come back. Thank you. I don't want to be anywhere near this. Whereas you watch hockey, you want to take a contrasting game in terms of the end of the game. Now, football, by the way, is not that interesting at the end. Because in football, if you're the winning team, or let's say half the time, it's not interesting. If you have the ball and you're leading, you can run out the clock. And the last 2 minutes end very boring. If you are the team trying to catch up to the other team and you have the ball in football at the end, then it's very interesting. So 50% of the time it's interesting. What, soccer, let's say the same thing. One team is trying to possess the ball and slow things down. The other team is trying to score. Not very interesting because in soccer they don't score much. Which, by the way, is one of the weaknesses of soccer. What was the one I wanted to talk about that was really exciting at the end? Well, baseball can be exciting, but there was another one. Oh, hockey. Hockey is the greatest game at the end. It's so fast, you can get from one end to the other literally in 2 or 3 seconds. It doesn't pay to play defensively in hockey. You always regret it. You know, a 2-goal lead, which would be like a 2-touchdown lead in football, is nothing in hockey. Some people say that it's worse to have a 2-goal lead than a 1-goal lead. With a 1-goal lead, you're desperate and you don't try and coast. You don't try and rest on your lead. But with 2, you tend to. And then the other team catches up and then they have the momentum. Especially if it's the home team. And then they score another, and now the game's tied, but they've got all the momentum. They've been playing hockey, and you've been playing safe. Well, in the last minute or two of hockey, the team that's losing can pull the goaltender. They can have the goaltender get off the ice, and as soon as he's off the ice, you can have a non-goalie go back on the ice. Now they have what they call 6 attackers. Well, I mean, there was a team recently, I sure can't remember which one it was, they won the game ultimately. They were 2 or 3 goals behind. They got 2 of them back. There was 3 minutes to play. They pulled their goalie. They got the 3rd goal back, so they tied it up. That's like being 3 touchdowns behind. And then in the overtime, they won the game. Basketball doesn't have that. Basketball is a formula. It's unfair. It's boring with all the stops in the last 30 seconds of play, especially lasting 30 minutes. And then, oh, what a surprise. Somebody gets a shot at the end. This is boring. Look at basketball highlights. Boring. Oh, well, look, he shot it and made it, or he shot it and missed. Those are the highlights. He dunked it? Oh, wow. These guys are giants, and they can jump a lot higher than I can. It's not interesting for them to dunk. LeBron James can hit the rim of the basket with his head. there have been still frames where you see his head is higher than the rim. The rim is like a foot and a half above the bottom of the string of the basket. I can't touch the string at the bottom of the basket. Even in my prime, I could just touch it, not even every jump. So in other words, this guy, his head can jump 2 feet higher than the tip of my finger. He has, I would say, at least a 3 foot height advantage on me. Well, that 10-foot hoop, for him, it's just not that big a deal. Dunking is not that big a deal. So what do they have to resort to? Oh, posterizing, where you jump over somebody. Well, the bottom line is, you're going to shoot. The other guy can't physically stop you. It's not football. And so you jump, and you're just going to the basket. The other guy is irrelevant. But because he's there, it's a poster. In other words, you take the picture of you going over him, and you're 3 feet taller than him. And oh, wow. That's oh nothing. Really, what that's showing is the weakness of the game. Once you have the ball in basketball, the other guy can't grab you. He can't tackle you. He can't check you. Like he can in football, soccer, and hockey. So, basketball has massive flaws. And sure enough, you look in the arenas, and you know the cameras don't want to show you this, but you'll catch glimpses. I've seen arenas commonly where there's clearly 5,000 people there and the thing could hold 25,000 or worse numbers. Now, yeah, in baseball this happens a bit, but why does it happen in baseball? Well, some teams don't draw a lot of fans because they're not good teams or they have a poor stadium that doesn't hold a lot of people. You know, it's an old stadium. But things like the Yankees, I know people that will travel hundreds of miles to go and watch the Yankees play. Oh, and the other thing with baseball is they have 160 games in the season, double what they have in basketball, double what they have in hockey, and 10 times what they have in football. So baseball has a problem of dilution. You can't afford to go to 80 home games of your baseball team unless someone buys you the tickets, you know, you're independently wealthy or you don't have to work or something. So that's why some of their games are sparsely attended. Basketball is sparsely attended, I think, because it has major design flaws, and they should be fixed. The foul one should be fixed. They should have two-minute fouls. The flagrant is a ridiculous non-fine. When you do a flagrant, you should be, number one, kicked out of the game. Number two, fined enough to hurt. Let's come up with a percentage. Let's make it 5% of what you make in the year. So you're making $15 million, so 5%, 1 in 20. That's about $1 million. You're not going to do a flagrant. And you're kicked out of the game. And then while you're kicked out of the game, like in soccer, the red card, when you are kicked out of the game with a red card in soccer, your team is short one player for the rest of the game. Well, even if you made it 1% of your salary, but did the red card treatment where you're kicked out of the game and the other team gets an advantage, or you made it that the other team gets 2 minutes or 5 minutes advantage, let's say 2 minutes for a regular foul and 5 minutes for a flagrant, where 5 minutes where it's five players against four, people would stop doing these flagrants. But then, of course, the other problem with basketball is the corruption of the officials. Why? Because the game is very fast-paced. You don't allow any contact. So you have to police tiny little bits of contact. So it's easy to blow the whistle or not blow the whistle. This one with LeBron, where he was hard fouled and there was no whistle whatsoever, was a fantastically bad bit of refereeing. Off the charts, really. There have been basketball officials that were found to be corrupt. There's a lot of sports betting. I think basketball lends itself to sports betting, right? Another thing with basketball is, let's say you're one of the really good teams. And by the way, in basketball, you have really good teams and really awful teams. And the difference is really substantial. I think one of the reasons why when LeBron was traded, why everyone was up in arms and the media was up in arms was these owners, by having one of the best teams, i.e. having one or two good players, it's like they've got a monopoly. They're going to get the most merchandise sales. They're going to get the most people coming to their games. They're going to get in the playoffs, which is extra millions of dollars. And LeBron said, hey, I'm trading myself to Miami Heat. People didn't know where he was going to go. Many thought he was going to stay with Cleveland, and he didn't. He upset the apple cart. He said, I'm in charge of me. And he created a dynasty down in Miami. They've proven that way. I think they've already won twice, the whole thing. And, you know, they're on their way this year. Well, the big owners didn't like that. That's why they, through the media, through the supposed press, that's why they taught us to not like LeBron for what he did. right off the bat, I went, hey, what's wrong with what LeBron did? He went where he wanted to go. He got the money he wanted. He didn't do anything wrong. Not a single thing. But the press hounded him for months. It still comes up years later. Shameful. So in basketball, the difference between the good teams and the bad teams is enormous because the individual players have too much importance. Again, another weakness in the game. Just recently in football, the Seattle Seahawks won the whole thing with no-name players. That was part of their formula. They recruited players others weren't looking at. They paid them less money, which meant, I guess, that they could spread around the money. You know, instead of having a couple of really high-priced players and then the rest get nothing, they were able to spread the money around, and they created this phenomenally winning team. Very impressive team. Seattle Seahawks last year was one of the great teams. I thoroughly enjoyed watching them win the whole thing. I don't think I predicted they'd win. I think at the end I thought the other team would, which I don't even remember their name now. But it was a blowout. Seattle blew them out of the water. It's amazing. And that's the team. Team sports should always reward the team. This guy who hard-fouled LeBron, basketball rewarded the thug. It only took one thug to bring down maybe the greatest basketball player in history. That's all wrong. So these basketball teams, the difference between the best and the worst is enormous. And it's gotten to be a bit of a fiasco where the worst teams, they don't even try the last half of the season. And they go on to become incredible losers. And then in basketball, they have a lottery system for the draft picks. The young players that come into the league get drafted. And instead of being able to choose which team you go to, they do it with a lottery. In other words, among the losing teams, you're going to go to a losing team, and then they're going to flip a coin as to which team you go for. Well, guess who that benefits? That benefits the owners. Also, who judges the quality of the coin flip? Maybe it is judged fairly. I don't know. There's nothing to say. There's nothing to prove it. Whereas when you choose which team you go to, like LeBron did, I know that was fair. Because there's only one player that it matters, only one person on the face of the earth that mattered in the LeBron trade. And that was LeBron. No one else mattered. Not a single other person on the face of the earth. He did what was right for LeBron. Period. So these poor hapless players, you can be a great basketball player, you get drafted by a random lousy basketball team, which may or may not help the team. When LeBron was in Cleveland, it didn't help the team. Cleveland did not win championships, even though LeBron was fantastically good, because the rest of his team was not good enough. So the system sort of breaks down there, where you have a great player, not a good team, and the result is poor. So the rich and the poor is really evident in basketball. It's like a class system, which is ironic, given this present controversy, which is a class system of the rich white guy being racist against a team of black players. It's unfortunately like this right up to the top level, like when it comes to negotiating salaries and who gets paid what. And who gets to control which team you end up on? It's kind of a shocking league, sadly. So, there's my basketball ramble. I really didn't think it would go on that long, but I did tie in a little bit of the other sports. Really looking forward to soccer this summer. The World Cup. Oh, that's going to be great. They call soccer the beautiful game. And you certainly see that at the high level. When you're watching, you know, World Cup, good teams, or when you're watching, you know, the Premier League in Europe. Those premier teams, they are premier teams, all right. Oh, I wanted to say a couple of things. Let me do the bad driver of the week before I forget. Bad driver of the week. I go to the library. I'm returning DVDs. I'm checking more out. And, you know, sometimes I got so many checked out, I can't check out it anymore. And so, to deal with that, I've been checking in the DVDs that I bring back. And the system where you do that, they only have one that you can run it yourself. And that's where the cars drive through and return the books. That in itself is a bit of a hard thing for me to handle, cars driving through drive-thrus and returning books. I simply never do that. I park my car, my truck, and I walk over and I return those books. Well, with this new system, and that was before when you just dumped them in, now there's a scanning process, and they scan each item individually, check it in, and then they tell you, okay, I'm ready for the next one. It can take several minutes per car, or in my case, per me. Unlike the guy with two flashlights at the drive-in restaurant. You remember those drive-in restaurants? Maybe you don't. your car, you'd drive in, and then you'd leave your lights on when you were ready for service, and then you'd turn them off. And if you needed, say you were ready to leave, after they brought you your food, you'd turn your lights on again, then they'd come out and they'd take your trays away. So then there was a commercial with the guy jogging, and he had the two flashlights, and he went into the drive-in. I'm like that at the library return drive-thru. I just walk, and there I am, stuff them in the box, and I'm just standing there. Well, what was interesting anyway was a car came behind me, and now they're waiting for me to finish, and they actually turned off the engine. This almost never happens. It blows my mind. You can think of any kind of a major delay you want, and people almost never turn off their engine. I learned some 10 or 20 years ago that if your car is going to be idling for 30 seconds or longer, you should turn off the engine. It pays. If it's shorter than that, you turn it off. Well, when you start it, there's like a surge of gas, which, by the way, was worse in the old days of carburetors. Now with fuel injection, that rule is probably a 15-second rule. If you're going to be idling for 15 seconds or longer, you should turn off. Well, guess what modern cars do? The hybrid cars and the high economy cars, they now have an automatic engine shut-off feature. Next time you're in a traffic jam and nothing's happening, next time your traffic has been held up because of construction and nothing's happening, just have a look around and see whose engines are running. Now, the only time where this makes sense is you're in the middle of summer in a hot place, or you're in the middle of winter in a cold place, and you don't think you can handle losing your car's air conditioning or heating. Even then, I still do it. Just crack the window, turn it off in the middle of summer. You know, it's called being connected to your environment. I like that. I like being connected to my environment. Well, the dog's snorting behind me. So I said to this person, you know, like, way to go. You're one of the few that, you know, turns off your car. That's awesome. And they said something back, and I started chatting with them while I'm stuffing my DVDs in. And then I realized they had, like, Bluetooth, that little earbud. And they were talking on the cell phone to somebody else. They were talking to me. So it's like, yeah, they turned off their engine, but they got the Bluetooth on. They got the cell phone going. They're getting irradiated still, even with their car off. Oh, dear. By the way, last month was National Distracted Driving Awareness Month. There was a story on this. One of the quotes I took from it, it said, about 421,000 people were injured in 2011 in car crashes that involved distracted driving. That's almost 500,000 people were injured in 1 year because of distracted drivers. That sounds like a big problem to me. Let's take fast food. 421,000 people were injured in fast food. Hang on, there's a dog in the move. Imagine 500,000 people injured in fast food restaurants from the food. Then no one would put up with it. Imagine 500,000 football players getting concussions. We don't tolerate it anywhere else, but we tolerate it in the driving. All right, so that was my bad driver of the week, which turned out to be a good driver, but bad cell phone user of the week. And by the way, they found out, like, hands-free. Hands-free doesn't help anything in a cell phone. You know, the speech-to-text, as they call it. In other words, you can say to your phone that you want to send a text, and then you talk, and it converts it to text. Well, they found out that the drivers doing that are equally as distracted as if they were doing a text. In other words, texting in any way, shape, or form doesn't work while you're driving. I didn't make a note of this link, but this was in Wired last week. The guy tried different software that was designed to stop you from texting or using your cell phone while you were driving. And the bottom line was the stuff didn't work or didn't work well or it was annoying and he got rid of it. And then this was discussed on Slashdot, and people on Slashdot were like, you know, this is a human problem. Can't you just turn off your phone? Can't you just not answer it? Yeah, it's ringing. Don't answer it. Your phone in your house when you're not there is ringing and you don't answer it. It's not the end of the world, Pete. It's kind of fascinating how cell phones become so justified in interrupting us. You know, in a way, cell phones are like basketball. And a wired phone is like football. Or email is like football, because I love email. And hockey is like a wired phone. Cell phones are a crappy form of communication. They're disruptive. They're dangerous. They're annoying. The quality is poor. Yes, they have some degree of importance, but It's sad to see that we give them importance to the extent of having 400,000 injuries because of them. For what? Hey, what's up? For that? That's what we're getting injured for? Do a little survey. The next 20 times you communicate on your cell phone, sending or receiving, just do a little calculation. How many of those had to happen? How many of those were important? It will depend on the person. Some do all their business by their phone. In other words, if they get a receipt in a transaction, they get an email to them. So it gets emailed to their phone. Okay, well, they're using their phone to manage their communication. But if their phone is in their car, they get that email while they're in their car, they get distracted by something that could go to their desktop computer at home or their laptop instead of going to their cell phone. In other words, use the right tool for the job. Know when to not use it. So that was my bad jar of the week. Gotta say, I feel unusually well organized this week. I'm patting myself on the back, which is probably a bad idea. Probably going to suddenly be something, some kind of glitch happen where I hit the wrong button and I don't save any of this. That would be unfortunate. All right, I'm going to close with what I was doing this weekend. I'm actually recording this on Sundays now, and I'm going to be working today, but I'm up at 3 in the morning, 3:30, just to get this recorded and before my day starts. I've been helping someone unpack. It's a family, it's a couple. I care for someone's children, and that someone's parents have moved closer to them. And I'm helping them unpack. And it turns out they got a lot of stuff. And that's an understatement. They lived almost 40 years in a place, and they were living in two cities, so they had a second apartment. And so they sold the first place, and they consolidated the apartment into a new, bigger apartment, which is now their home. So you can see that's a recipe for challenge, because you're taking a large house that you've lived in a long time, and you're taking an apartment, and then you're moving it all into a bigger apartment. Something's got to give, right? These people are long-lived. They've been married 50-plus years, which is kind of cool. And so they're also at the stage in their life where, you know, dealing with moving, unpacking, all that stuff is hard. And they need help. Well, a lot of great things have happened in helping these people. You know, when you help good people, everyone gets helped. It's like there's a saying, the teacher also learns. The teacher, by teaching, also learns. That's an interesting thing. I think a lot of teachers either don't know that saying or they don't see the value in that saying. When teachers are new, they learn, right? That first year when you haven't even got your syllabus together, your curriculum organized, you're scrambling, right? You're 1 week ahead of the kids and you're trying to come up with what are you going to do next? You know, how are you going to cope with this problem next week? But after a while, you get on autopilot. You're not changing. Your course is not changing. The kids are changing. And yeah, that's part of the system. The kids come in, it's a new batch each year, and they don't know algebra, and when they leave your class, they know algebra. But you got to keep it fresh. You got to keep it current. You got to tailor what you offer to the people that you're teaching. Anyway, I got a chance, I don't know if you're aware, but I've done a video on moving, an extensive article on moving. Hang on, Pete. And trying to share some of what I've learned about moving, and trying to, you know, moving can be stressful. Some people are inherently not very good at it, and trying to give people tips. Well, I got involved here in sort of the mother of all moves. As you may have noticed in the mornings, I'm what people would quaintly describe as congested. But I'm not really congested in the morning. I'm decongesting. When I wake up, my body automatically clears out. And ever since I got rid of the microwaves and I sleep better, my body has more to clean out in the morning. In other words, it's getting caught up. And it comes out easier. It comes out bang when you get up, when you get going. And takes the form of lymphatic congestion, to use a technical term. What people would call mucus or phlegm or a frog in your throat. Anyway, I apologize for at times interrupting the Floydcast to clear my throat or cough or swallow or whatever. But I assure you, at the end of my Floydcast, I feel great because my body has cleansed and cleared itself out. And that's a good thing. You know, people, they cough and they're like, oh, are you getting a cold? They sniffle and they're like, oh, do you have a cold? I had a cold last year. You know, the reaction to colds is comical. It's nonsense. Take the word cold and throw it in the refrigerator. That's where it belongs. It belongs on the cold water tap. It belongs in the middle of Winnipeg in December. forget cold for your body, other than the fact that you don't want your body to get chilled. If you get chilled, you might, quote, catch a cold, quote. You know, the cold thing, right? Why are colds talked about so much? Because doctors make lots of money from colds. That's probably, I'm going to guess, that on average, pound for pound, doctors make more money from colds than from anything else. Which is ironic, because when you go to the doctor for a cold, he cannot help you. You cannot help a cold. Everybody knows this. You cannot cure a cold. There's no drug that will cure a cold. You can't shorten it by drugs, except by getting in the way of the healing process. It's like if a cold is a maid coming to your house and cleaning your house, taking drugs for a cold is like going into your house while the maids are in there saying, get out, and kicking all the maids out of your house. And then you're like, there, I got rid of the cold. Yeah, and your house is still dirty. A cold, in quotes, is your body needing to clean itself. So my body, after I got rid of the microwaves, and I feel like just so much better, it's just no comparison. I'm not going back to microwave hell. No way. Not for anything. Not for a job, not for anything. Me, I am too important to allow myself to be attacked and killed by wireless. It's so unnecessary. If you work for a company, you don't need your cell phone unless you're in your car traveling. And then you only need it when you need it. Even then, you know, that's minimal cell phone usage. I carry a cell phone, it's turned off, and when I minimally need it, I minimally use it. Other than that, you don't need wireless routing, wireless networking. You sure don't need it in the workplace. You don't need it in your house. You can get wired connections. You can have wired phones. You sure don't need 90% of what your smartphone can do. Someone should come out with a video about all the dumb things your smartphone can do. Aha. Oh, boys, cell phones and wireless, man, it's just depressing. This place that I've been working at, they have a Nest thermostat. Nest was bought by Google. It's a smart thermostat. I'd love to know who it's smart for. This couple that have moved into this apartment with this Nest thermostat, they're just going to use it like a regular thermostat. It's not ever going to give them any feature that they need wireless radiation for. But these apartments are managed, right? There's a management company. So now this management company can snoop into their place without physically coming in the door and go, oh, they run it at 72 degrees all the time. It's creepy. It's like the smart meters. It's creepy and unnecessary. What's next? You know, these Fitbits and these things you strap onto your wrist that are supposedly going to help you with something. It's pretty ironic that they're for fitness and they give you radiation burns. I don't know. I got a little bit confused by that. Maybe you didn't. I did. Those things are going to be mandatory in the future. You can just see the movie, strap him down. He needs his fitness monitor. And that wireless fitness monitor that's going to slowly kill you, make you weaker, more compliant, and also more inclined to self-medicate. When you feel crappy, you medicate. You want a treat. You want a treat of something to drink, something to eat, something to spend money on. You want to pamper yourself. You want to make yourself feel better. But if you don't get rid of the cause, then you keep doing that, which means you consume more than normal. That's exactly what they want. These smart things are designed for us to consume more, be less happy, less healthy, live shorter lifetimes so that they can get the population down to their 500 million or whatever. It's just a creepy, creepy thing. It's just hard to get away from it. It's so bad. Anyway, so these people, I helped them move, and I'm appreciative, I'm grateful to have had the chance to meet these people, to learn what they did with their life, where they're coming from mentally. It's interesting, this guy, he has a couple of hobby interests, and one of them is paleontology, study of man, I guess, or study of ages. I'm showing my ignorance, but basically the study of biological things over the ages. And what did he end up talking about right off the bat? He talked about how the studies and the findings that are being published these days, they don't have significance. What he meant was a very specific thing. He studied economics, and in his career, he helped small businesses with their stores, with their franchising, their merchandising. Choosing your location, for example, he was talking about that and how a lot of thinking should go into your location, and you can't just, you know, do it via the computer. You got to get out on the road and go and check out the location. Well, what he was saying was that when he said about significance, you measure the statistical significance of something. And there's like a standard, I believe it's 3 sigma. A standard that if your new finding is not at least that significant, calculated number, then it's not a finding. You can't publish it. You can't talk about it. Go away. But that's not happening these days. Well, guess what? It's exactly the same with physics. I've run into exactly the same thing. A few weeks back, there was some particularly hideous thing to do with the cosmic microwave background and the Big Bang and inflation, and everyone was oh so excited about it. And as they were announcing it, they were announcing tweaks that would be needed so that this finding fit in with all the other findings. Tweaks, hacks, kludges, shims, shoehorns required to fit their theory into the consciousness of life. You know what? That theory has no value. Their theory had no value as they were announcing it. And there was the press soaking it up because it furthers their agenda. But wasn't it interesting that this guy in a totally unrelated field was complaining about the same thing that I've been complaining about? This is what the people who are thinking are noticing. Things these days don't have significance. As Bill Hicks would say, you know, go back to bed, America. Go back to watching American Gladiators. In other words, this finding that I was up in arms about was to do with all the hot-button terms they use in physics that are all nonsense. Cosmic microwave background, Big Bang, and inflation. It's all garbage. And yet, those are probably number one, number two, and number three buzz phrases in the physics business, in the cosmology business. That's pretty shameful. When you talk about a healthy hamburger, you don't talk about how much MSG is in it and how much ground-up cow hoof is in your burger. You don't do that. But in physics, you do. Physics has a lot of garbage, and that garbage is first, second, and third at every announcement. It's amazing. How do they pull this off? They pull it off with fancy explosions. And they do those explosions enough times, coupled by ooh, ah, music. And eventually we start to sniff the same glue. We start to believe it. Wow, that really is significant, that explosion. Isn't it interesting, explosions? Star Wars, Star Trek, explosions, fighting, violence, war. And now, Big Bang, right? We got explosions right built into the system. That's just perfect for them. Always get that war front and center. And religion. Big Bang is religion. Sex and death is one of my friends from many years ago talked about. Sex and death. They always want to have sex and death right in there. In this case, it's war and religion. They always want that at the heart of anything they're talking about. So this couple was refreshing. Nice to see people that have lived together for 50 years and they're happy together. They're making it work. They shared. Their stuff is all in boxes, right? You're unpacking the boxes, so you know, there's a certain amount of vulnerability and openness there, and you have to be respectful and polite. They're trusting that you will be respecting them and their privacy and be respectful of them. They were just really interesting. They've traveled, a lot of nice photos and knickknacks. It's a great perspective thing. And then the funny thing was that their daughter came along with their grandchildren, two of them, and I got to care for them and do the move. And you'd think, hey, that might be a handful, right? Because the kids can be a handful by themselves, and the move is certainly challenging, it's tiring. But it was great. The kids were full of energy, we channeled the energy, and they helped with the moving. We got a chance to do all kinds of fun things, like going down the elevator, which they like, and there was like a cart. As part of the apartments, they have like these carts like you'd see at a hotel. And we'd put boxes of packing paper and whatnot on these carts, and we'd take them down to the large room where they handle recycling things. We literally have half filled this gigantic room in the basement with their moving leftovers. This has been a big thing. This is day 3 of unpacking. And I got to hand it to him, the gentleman who I'm working with, who, you know, it's interesting. He had a health problem happen 6 years ago. And bottom line, he had to change his diet. And he had to change his diet to a very healthy diet. And what's really interesting is, this guy can work. Can he ever? Well, let's see why. Yeah, I think it has something to do with that diet, all right. So, anyway, this has been a longer than normal Floydcast, which I'm now going to have to fit in my editing of, and hopefully get it up on the net on May the 5th, tomorrow. Hopefully it was enjoyable, something of interest in there, as I covered a variety of subjects, as I usually do. Why am I summarizing? I do not know. This has been Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing a Floydcast number 12 for May the 5th, 2014. Good luck with your life. Take care.